TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Badlands Podcast, the only podcast out there that is 100% chiseled and is proudly part of the Chairshot Radio Network. I am Mags, and today, wow, what a day it has been. Laugh tends to throw spanners at you sometimes, and when that happens and you lose your guest and your co-host in the same day, you kind of have a little core group of people you can rely on to bail you out at the last minute. And luckily I've got that kind of person here, one of my favorite people on wrestling Twitter, one of my favorite people in life in general, and the person who dragged me kicking and screaming into this podcasting game. So it's his fault that this podcast is a thing, really. The one and only magnificent Matt Willis. Matt, thank you for bailing me out. How are you?
I appreciate those lovely kind words, Mag, but it's Matt-nificent, not magnificent.
I said magnificent. It's the cold that I've got.
I will take your word for it. Bill Jackson gave me that name, and that's why I'm not changing it since. It's a pleasure to be back on Badlands, sir.
I just wish it was in better circumstances. Like I said, laugh has thrown us a couple of spanners today, but this won't be your only appearance on Badlands, at least in this half of the year. But we're more on that when that episode drops. So you have inherited a topic for today, but before we get to the main topic, because you've been on the show before, obviously you can't give your picks for the Mount Rushmore of greatest wrestlers, so I've thrown a little curveball at you, and I thought we'll come up with a Mount Rushmore of hot takes in wrestling. Now, that doesn't have to be current hot takes, it can be anything as long as some sort of tenable link to the world of wrestling. So I think let's just make one between us. You have a couple of picks and I'll have a couple of picks and see where it takes us. Would you like to go first or would you like me to go first?
I'm happy to go first. I thought about going in general, like throughout the whole time and space, but mine are pretty modern because it's on my mind right now. That's why the hot take. First one is get rid of Revival. They're not good enough.
Wow, going straight in for the jugular. What is it about them that you don't think is good enough? I'm not a huge fan of the Revival, but I think they're one of the better teams that WWE have got. What is it that's just not resonating with you?
Before I answer that quiz, let me ask you a question in response to that. What makes them one of the best tag teams on the roster? Because the crowd certainly ain't going for them.
I think for me, crowd reaction is not something I usually listen for. It's more fluidity and how they work as a tag team in the ring. And for me, I think outside maybe the Bar and the Usos, I think that the Revival have got probably the best kind of tag team work on main roster WWE anyway.
So New Day, the OC, the Viking Raiders.
I'm not saying that they aren't great tag teams. I'm just saying I think that working as a smooth tag team, I think the Revival are up there with the best.
I don't think they're worth the money they're paying them, and then crucially, they're not worth the screen time. There's a lot of people who actually need the screen time, and they're just taking it up.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of play devil's advocate, if you will, cheap plug. For all the kind of backstage stuff and the Twitter outbursts and stuff like that, they are getting to the point where maybe they're not worth keeping on board for that. But as a tag team, I would definitely keep them for the backstage stuff and the complaining. Yeah, and they're getting to the point for me where they like Mark and Maria Kanellis in the way that they're complaining all the time. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't get rid of him, but I can understand it being your hot take.
Yeah, so what's your next? What's your one then, sir?
So, my first one, and I am literally flying by the seat of my pants with ease, is I think that the WWE product is the best that it has been in the last 10 years. The current product is the best in-ring product that it has been in the last 10 years.
When from me arguing that.
Well, there you go. It's not that hot of a take. Then I think that this core group, this group of wrestlers are legitimately the best, the most talented wrestlers that WWE have ever had. And whilst the booking and the writing is not up to par, the ring work is quality. So I can't
slightly argue that point. I think that some of the booking has been top quality. I do think that some of it needs improving in places, but you can't argue for last 4 months since Heyman took over on Raw, it's got much better overall. Mm-hmm. Lana, Lashley aside.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, taking the storylines out, it's getting back to the kind of the storylines that we got in the Attitude Era, but in ring, I think it's absolutely the best the product that WWE put out in a long, long time.
Okay, fair enough. That's a good take, in my opinion.
That's good. So we've agreed with each other so far. Well, partially agreed with each other.
Okay. I've got one from four because I had extra here just in case I needed to go with something else. Pick me a number between one and four.
Three.
I was hoping you'd say that. AEW having a second show. Why? Why? Dynamite isn't even a year old yet. I mean, there's running before you can walk. I mean, yes, AEW have had some success. I won't deny that. And they've got some great talent on that roster. But if they were showcasing it all properly, they've got AEW Dark, don't forget that. So people are being shown on more than one product. But do we need another TV product? I mean, let's not forget that it took WWE, they didn't start SmackDown in 99. So that was a good 6 years after Raw. But they've been doing TV, but WWE, WF and WWF before that have been going since like the 1560s. So they knew what they were doing. Now, I'm not saying AEW don't know what they're doing, but at the same time, get Dynamite polished to the point where no one can argue with you taking on WWE at doing more than one show. I can't pick New Japan because I don't watch New Japan as much as you guys do, but I'm guessing they have one show.
They don't have a weekly show.
Exactly. They have one show a month. That's it, probably. Yeah.
No, not really. They build to a monthly pay-per-view, but what they do is instead of having like weekly shows, they have something called Road 2, which is it'll be like a few shows all crammed in like a week or so leading up to that pay-per-view. So there can be sometimes 3-4 weeks without any New Japan, and then all of a sudden you'll get 4 or 5 shows in quick succession.
Well, that's their thing. That's fair enough sort of thing. But Ring of Honor had one show. We'll talk about that another time, no doubt. Impact, when they went up against WWE, only had one show, which was Impact. WCW tried throwing two shows against WWE and didn't work for them. Thunder was really poorly received, even though AJ Styles did wrestle 2 matches on Thunder, if my memory served it correctly. I think that AEW are biting off a little they can chew too early.
Yep, and you've also got to remember who the company that they provide the show for is. It's TNT, the same company that forced WCW to create Thunder, which went down like a lead balloon. I actually do agree with you. I think it is too much too soon. I think TNT have seen the success that they've had with Dynamite and just thought, this is working, let's throw some money at them and get as much programming out of them as we can. And it, like I said, I think they should have been on a much more sturdy footing. Like WWF took 20 plus years to do the same thing. Time will tell. They've got, I think, severe production issues now. I think adding an extra hour plus show to that is going to just make them production issues worse. And I think what a lot of people are missing with this new deal, I think, is it $145 million over a 3-year deal?
Give or take.
Yeah, but the fact is that before this deal came into place, TNT were paying for the production, which was being billed at $500,000 per episode. Now that will now come out of the money that they'll be paying AEW. So that works out to losing $20 million plus a year out of this deal. So that $145 million over 3 years kind of then doesn't look as big of a deal as it sounds. Then you add on the fact that they want an extra show. If that adds another 100,000 to 200,000 onto the bill, you might be looking at they're actually making $5 to $6 million a year profit off this. And as that's still amazing, but it's still not as good as it's making out to be.
No, it's... Well, time will tell. As you say, time will tell.
So, for my last hot take, I am going to go with the Royal Rumble is the premier event on the WWF calendar. The WWE calendar, should I say.
Mm-hmm.
Even above the likes of SummerSlam and WrestleMania.
I've got to admit, I do get excited for Rumble.
Yeah, I mean, coming from someone who's been to a WrestleMania, what would you say you would rather go and watch, a WrestleMania or a Royal Rumble?
That's a tough question, Max. But Mania Edge is it just. But having been to see one now I'd want to go see a Rumble.
Yeah.
If it was before I'd been to Mania, it would be a case of Mania all day long.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the thing that stands out about the Mania is it's the unpredictability. It's the surprise entrance. It's just not knowing what's going to go on. I mean, we recently did the prediction contest on the Matt Attack, but it's guesswork. It's all educated guesswork, and that's what makes the Royal Rumble so special for me. So, yep, the Royal Rumble is the premier event for me in the WWE's calendar.
Okay, well, I'll give you that, but I will also say, if you're going to go with surprises, let's not go with last year's Royal Rumble, shall we? Because we had one person that was a surprise. Only one non-contracted superstar, and that was a Hall of Famer anyway, which was Jeff Jarrett. There was no surprises in either Rumble. They were good Rumbles, don't get me wrong, but it weren't surprises.
And so, do you think that's because of the sheer amount of talent on the WWE roster?
Partially. I also think it's... And let's not forget that at time recording, we've just done the predictions, obviously. 22 people announced before the event, and none of them went NXT.
That is a very interesting. I mean, it wasn't long ago that they were doing 40 men in a Rumble and then 50 men in the Greatest Royal Rumble, and they had easily the manpower to have the wrestlers in it. So maybe the days of lots of surprise entrants have gone.
Maybe, but surprises should be that, surprises.
So. Yeah, I agree. There were our, I'd say, lukewarm takes more than anything.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling?
Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
So let's get on to the main topic. Like I said, you inherited this topic from the guest who unfortunately wasn't able to make it, and it's the Mount Rushmore of title belt redesigns. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they have to be the best title belt redesigns. You might pick them because they're absolutely awful, but it's just title belt redesigns that kind of stick in the mind. Matt, would you like to go first with your first pick on the Mount Rushmore of title belt redesigns?
Okay, my first one. Maybe it was softball. It's a negative change. And this is technically two redesigns, but because they happened in the space of a month, I'm going to include it as one. The hardcore title.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if you're aware of the hardcore title belt changing design, Max, were you?
I am. I'm aware of the one. I'm assuming you're going on about the JBL one.
And then it changed to Tommy Dreamer's, of course. Yeah, now, whilst the reason they changed it, for people who don't know, is because the hardcore title belt, let's face it was getting rather tired, shall we say?
I think it started tired. I think it went further and further down.
How it survived that long is beyond me.
Yeah.
It lasted a long time, and JBL obviously changed it, going by Bradshaw at the time, and put like a Texas ball on it and everything. And when Tommy Dreamer won the title, he put a New York stop sign or New York car sign on it anyway. It wasn't the same hardcore title anymore. It just wasn't.
Yeah.
And it sticks in my head because I saw some of the greats of his business have held that title. Even only briefly, we're talking Chris Jericho, we're talking Rob Van Dam, we're talking The Undertaker, we're talking Kurt Angle. Held it for 35 seconds, still held it. And yeah, it's just little things. Bubba Ray Dudley, that was his first singles champion in WWE.
Yeah, and to say they took an old Winged Eagle title that had apparently been smashed up, from what I heard, They broke it on purpose. It was actually one what they kept in storage, and they broke it on purpose to kind of, it was handed to Mankind, basically to placate him, and it was done like that on purpose. Vince McMahon wanted the world title like broken up and sellotaped together almost, and yeah, it was very very iconic at the time. And like I said, they changed it to the bull, the longhorn, and yeah, it kind of was the death knell for that title for me.
It was. Thankfully, they decided to eventually retire it into the Intercontinental title in the end.
So I'll go for my first one, and mine is also a kind of a negative. But at the time, for me, I actually remember being quite impressed with it. I'm going to go with one of probably the most divisive and controversial belt designs. When the WWE kind of adopted the spinner belt, there was a lot of people who loved it and a lot of people who absolutely detested it. But before we got the actual WWE Championship spinner belt, we got the US version of the spinner belt. John Cena had regained his US title from Carlito, and I think it was his third run with the title. And he was deep into this Thuganomics character that he had. Matt's giving the word laugh there. So, yeah, we went into Armageddon, where John Cena was facing Jesus, which was Carlito's muscle at the time, and who he was rumored to have stabbed John Cena in a nightclub. And then whilst we had that pretty unremarkable street fight, it was infamous for being the debut of the spinner belt, with side plates that were made up of jeweled stars, and stars and stripes flag, sorry. Center plate was round and it has edged with diamonds, and it had the word champion in bright blue text in the middle. The main part of this plate was a big United States flag and huge silver and diamond US logo in the middle. And then to add to the supreme tackiness of this title, above and below this US logo was handwritten word laugh, and below it was John Cena. And to add a little bit of gaudiness, there was a little trademark sign above John Cena's name, just to cover any legal problems the WWE would have had with that. I think this title was only around for about 3 or 4 months, but it seemed to have been around in memory a lot longer than that. Cena eventually lost the belt to Orlando Jordan, who was part of JBL's cabinet. And as soon as they won that title, JBL and Jordan blew up the spinner belt and brought back the previous version of the title that we've still have today. So yeah, my first one is the US spinner title.
4 months that belt was around for. 4 months. It's so refreshing to have someone who has this depth of knowledge. No offense, Graham, but it's
so Matt, let's go to you for your second pick.
Oh, right, okay. Right. I've got so many picks down here. Now, do I go Gordy or do I go... No, because I get 4 picks tonight still. I make my one, you make your one, don't you? So.
Yep.
Right, okay, cool. In that case then, I'm going to... Coming off of that, 2013, the day the spinner belt got retired, and The Rock became a champion and held a brand new championship. It's similar to the one that is today, but it instead of having World Heavyweight Championship underneath, it just said champion underneath and had the scratch logo. And it felt like a WWE championship. Mm-hmm. It looked like the top belt. It looked like the be all and end all. I loved it. And it felt like something that the champion would wear. There's nothing to say about that the spinner belt was any less a WWE championship. It obviously was the top prize. But one thing I'll note is that from 2009 onwards, no one spun it.
Oh, we'll get to that.
It didn't spin at any point, apart from when The Miz turned it around. But that's part of the reason why I was so glad to see it go in the end. And this, it looked like the real thing. And even though, mainly because of WWE rebranding its logo, they changed the belt slightly, which they did in 2014 for all the belts. So, this is where they really sort of, do I say grew up? Don't know. But it certainly felt like a grown-up title belt. I say that as someone who had a spinner belt on his shelf next to a WWE championship belt.
Do you know, I actually agree with you. I think it was a sign of WWE growing up. And it was also a sign of kind of getting some order across the brands. Obviously, we for the longest time we had two different belts, what looked totally different to each other, and I think that this was kind of ushering in like a design that kind of overlapped both Raw and SmackDown. The Fruit Loop belts do get a lot of hate, but I do like the fact that the uniform, the you know that is the belt for the champion, if you understand what I mean. So, yeah, I like that pick. Not that there's anything I could do about it if I didn't. You mentioned then a little nugget of information about the spinner belt, and my second pick is actually, I'm staying with the spinner belt, and it's going to be the WWE spinner belt. Another one for John Cena. It was John Cena was very influential in this kind of title design. He first won the WWE title whilst he was on SmackDown in 2005, obviously from JBL. And when Cena was champion, he had this new title, or he was influenced the new title design, which would become the spinner belt. Very, very similar in style to the one that he had for the US title. Very gaudy, full of flashing diamonds and a big spinner plate in the middle. And it was definitely WWE's way of showing that this was the era of Cena, and they wanted to make the title look cool and stand out, and it would represent Cena as a champion. With him being like the new face of the company, it would make sense that this title would debut shortly after he won the belt. So when he introduced it, you could kind of get the feeling that when he lost it, it would go away again, but it actually didn't. It stuck around for 8 years, and like Matt said, it didn't, in the later editions of it, it didn't actually spin, and that's because there wasn't a plate in the middle to spin. It ended up just being a set plate. The reason why it actually stuck around was confirmed on Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. He thought the belt was absolutely tacky, but it was the biggest selling replica belt that they'd ever had. And it made so much money that they kept it around. And then just to add to that, I want to bring up another version of the spinner belt, and probably actually my favourite version of the spinner belt, the rated R superstar version. Edge and Cena were in the middle of a big feud, and they both were having title reigns. Edge had his own version of the spinner belt, and he had his rated R superstar logo in the middle of the title where the WWE spinning logo was. Yeah, and I felt that was... It kind of brought on this fashion of having something unique to the title belt for each holder. Now it's kind of like the side plates we get with the wrestlers getting their own unique side plates. But this was kind of like one of the starts of getting something unique for each wrestler. So, yeah, I'm going to go with a second spinner belt.
Well, talk about those side plates while you're on the subject of that. I actually kind of like the side plate thing because they haven't got like nameplate anymore. The nameplate thing, when it came in, I feel, I can't speak for that, I don't know for certain, because when the WCW title came in, obviously it had a nameplate. Mm-hmm. And from there on in, WWE championships all had nameplates on them going forwards. Now, whether or not that was as a result of that, I don't know. I kind of liked it. But I do like the side plates thing. But do you remember Jinder Mahal when he won the championship? Okay. He didn't have a logo. So he just wrote his name on it. He just wrote his name on two side plates. That was it.
Yeah, I think they did that with Ciampa. I want to say Ciampa with the NXT title. He didn't have a logo then, so they just wrote Ciampa on, well, the ex Ciampa onto some plates and stuck them on. So, yeah, it is interesting how that was kind of how they brought personalised like name plates into the titles.
It was nice. It was a nice thing they did back then, and each era had its own significant things. Yeah. Now, I've gone bad, good. I'm going to go technically bad. Right. The Intercontinental Championship.
Ooh.
The question is, which one am I going for?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm holding off.
Now, the Intercontinental Championship, before we get into it, it was obviously started in 1979 when Pat Patterson, quote unquote, won a championship unifying the North and South American championships. They never existed. Right.
Okay. Now, but in the tournament.
No, it was almost completely kayfabe and everything. But when do you think the first title defense of that title happened outside of North America? Why is there no the title was crowned?
I'm going to say it was at SummerSlam 92.
Only 3 years before that, actually. Only wow. 3 years before.
So it was about almost over 10 years.
It was 10 years before. And it was defended in Italy by Rick Rude against the Ultimate Warrior. And the first Asian defense was in Japan in 91, 97, the first one in Africa. And the first Australian defense wasn't until 2006.
They don't go to Australia that much, do they?
No, as proven, unfortunately. Yeah. That's a shame, because I liked Super Showdown there a couple of years ago. Anyway, digressing from a point, the IC title belt, which I am nominating, is the one which was surrendered in 2011. But the one which I remember is the RVD hold, and I saw Austin, The Rock, I saw Triple H hold this. I saw Jeff Hardy hold this title belt. William Regal, Edge, Test. I could carry on. The Hall of Fame list of people who held this version of a championship. It was a beautiful thing. Absolutely beautiful. And then AEW's answer that Vince McMahon walked out with a new championship belt at Hell in a Cell 2011. Saying, this is a new one. It's white, so that makes me it's good. Jesus Christ. That title belt was the ugliest piece of shit I've seen in my entire life.
This is worse than any of your hot takes.
And then they ruined it further with a new one. But, this is me having a good moment. The belt that was replaced by that title, that was my favourite one. And for me, that will always be what Intercontinental Championship looked like. So for me, that one there, that's my pick. That championship. I can't remember when it started. 98, I think it was.
The oval one. The Attitude Era oval one.
The Attitude Oval belt, yeah. The Attitude Oval one. That is, when I think Intercontinental Championship, that's the belt I think of.
I disagree with you. I mean, it's your pick and it's not for me to veto, but my favourite belt of all time is the Intercontinental title. It's the one that was replaced by the one you're on about, the oval one. And then when Cody brought back the redesigned original one, I was a happy, happy person. I weren't very much taken with the WWF Scratch logo on it. I liked the block logo on it better. But yeah, that's my favourite title belt. And I think looking at all the Intercontinental title belts, really, they're all, for me anyway, very good-looking belts. Even the latest one is a really nice-looking belt. I thought I would absolutely hate it.
Title belt?
Yeah.
Look, I can't veto you, mate.
You don't like it?
I think it's hideous. I think it's the worst belt on the roster right now.
The 24/7 title is clearly the worst.
I prefer that over it. That's saying something.
Well, after those horrific hot takes, I'm actually gonna go with the Intercontinental title for my pick, for my third pick, but it's not the Intercontinental title that you're thinking of. It's actually the IWGP Intercontinental title from over in New Japan. This will probably be news to Matt, not being a very regular.
I'm aware of said title.
Ah, but are you aware of the original title?
Not the original one, but I'm aware of said titles. So enlighten me, sir.
Right, well, in October of 2010, an American promotion called Jersey All Pro Wrestling announced that it had reached agreement with New Japan that they would run the first shows in the United States for the company. And New Japan officially announced this as the Invasion Tour 2011. Attack on the East Coast, which is typical of New Japan, not coming up with very catchy names.
That is unfortunate, yes.
So these shows took place in the middle of May 2011, and they had a tournament over these 3 days, which was called the IWGP Intercontinental Championship Tournament, with the champion being crowned over these three shows. In this tournament was Okada, Takahashi, Toru Yano, and actually former WWE star MVP, who ended up winning the tournament and being the first ever Intercontinental champion over there in New Japan. But this title eventually came into the hands of another WWE star and a former three-time IWGP heavyweight champion, Shinsuke Nakamura. And he proclaimed it his mission to raise the prestige of this belt. He didn't like the fact that that belt made him the best of the second tier of wrestlers. He felt that if you had the second belt, that meant you were the second best wrestler in the whole company. And with that, he also didn't like the design of the belt. He said he felt it was very plain. It had flat plates on black leather, and it was a disrespect to New Japan. And it actually looked like a 10 yen coin rather than a wrestling title. So he revealed a new title belt, which is the one kind of like the one we see today. Very similar in design. It's very similar in design to the actual world title over in New Japan. Yeah. It's got like a kind of built-up 3D design on white leather. And it's like almost a brassy coloured title rather than the silver of the world one. But the story of this belt kind of doesn't end there. We have current champ Tetsuya Naito won the Intercontinental title, and he felt that this title was below him, and he kind of showed the title a lot of disrespect. He used to throw it about, swing it above his head, just abuse this title to the point where he actually broke the plates on the title. But this actually caused a big problem for New Japan, because New Japan wasn't the governing body of wrestling in Japan. It's actually the IWGP. And New Japan or the IWGP didn't actually own the rights to the belt design. The rights were actually owned by an independent designer. And he was actually in dispute with New Japan at the time. So he refused to make them a replacement. New Japan did what us fans have to do with New Japan titles. Because they're not legally allowed to sell replicas of them. They turned to the bootleg market and actually got a Pakistan-made bootleg of the Intercontinental title. And the one you see today is actually a Pakistan bootleg of the IWGP Intercontinental title. And you can see how the gold plating on the belt has actually worn off, and you get this kind of two-tone gold and silver look that you have. That's because it's actually a replica of the belt.
Yikes.
Yep. So my third pick, the IWGP Intercontinental title.
That is a good pick. I did look at the old one, to be fair. And to be fair, the old one looked fine. To be fair, it looked fine. The new one looked good, don't get me wrong, but the old one looked fine. It wasn't like it was the most dramatic change. Unlike my last pick.
Go for it.
My last pick. I'm glad I can swear on this show. 2006, the bastardization of what's what I'm looking for here? A way of life happened. Yeah. What, during the Attitude Era, what was the most important company for Attitude?
ECW.
Yes. 2006, ECW was reborn. They only had one championship.
It was horrific.
The original one they brought back. Harken back to the old days, and I was so happy to see it, because although I didn't watch ECW growing up, we didn't really get it here, but I did get the video game, so I was aware of the championship, and I thought the thing of beauty, and I saw Van Damme had finally got hold of it, and it was great. And then what happened?
Wow.
Fuck me, fucking sideways. What the hell were they thinking? First of all, as the big silver belt. That's the start of it. Okay. The fact is it had Ethan in the middle sort of thing, and a silver belt kind of implies it's not the top title.
Which was the point.
But the worst part is what was inscribed above it. Want to say what it was?
Go for it.
World Wrestling Entertainment.
It was an awful belt.
Where that it was WWE brand at that point. And I went back and watched WWE Untold, the story of ECW and everything, and Shane had this great idea about it, and then Vince took over. And if Shane had stayed in control, things may have been different. Mm-hmm. And, controversial opinion, ECW was not a failure. When it was reborn in WWE, it wasn't a failure at all. Because basically, it's just NXT. Before NXT was NXT. Which is fine. The problem is they had the name of ECW on it. Yeah. And it was not ECW. It was ECW for 6 months. And then that was it.
And that's why it's referred to as WWE CW.
Exactly. But that's why it's on here. Because the classic belt made me have hope. And then that new belt made me like... Let me put it this way. When you end up with your top, with your main champion being drafted to another show with the belt, and then the only person on that champ with a championship gold is Shelton fucking Benjamin with the United States Championship, that is saying something. No offense to Benjamin, he's a fantastic athlete, but it's not the ECW United States Championship. It was the WWE Championship, and that's annoying. But see, we had three great stars who came through who did hold the classic style championship. CM Punk held that championship. John Morrison held that championship. Chavo Guerrero held that championship. Kane had his second world title reign, a world title reign nonetheless. Of course, we also had the Big Show hold it.
And Vince McMahon.
I was just getting to that, yeah. And everyone's favourite marriage breaker, Bobby Lashley. Twice. But at the same time, it was the first time Christian had a world championship in WWE, of course. He obviously went on to become a multiple-time world champion afterwards, so it wasn't the end of the world for him. But it's just very sad.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway I've got from it is, and you kind of touched on it, was it didn't look like a world championship. It looked like as if a child fan had made it out of cardboard and tinfoil.
Let me put it this way. When you look at all the championships currently on WWE roster, okay, the current belts, which tag belts look to you like the top belts?
I'd say the NXT UK ones.
Well, I don't like those ones particularly. I was going with NXT US.
They're nice as well.
Yeah, they're absolutely. The thing of beauty, they were one of my extra ones that were brought in 3 years ago now. They were. Those ones are beautiful, but they look like championship belts. Whereas, look at the Raw and the SmackDown tag titles.
I hate them with a passion.
And then they look. Back when I was growing up, when I was like Mason's age, they had like these foam WWE Championship belts, and it was the old classic logo, the old wing, not the winged eagle one, the one that Austin used to carry around in 2001.
The big eagle.
Yeah. Well, that one with like a blue foam, mm-hmm. and the SmackDown belt looked exactly like it.
Yep.
It's very sad.
Yeah, I've always thought they look like pennies and five pences.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't a fan of the old ones where New Day got their new, they beat Demolition's record. I wasn't a fan of those ones, to be fair. My favourite tag titles are the 2002 World Tag Titles, ones which were replaced by them, ones which, you know, the ones which Jericho and Christian debuted. Yeah. Those were the best tag titles WWE had for many years. They had it for 8 years, and they were things of fucking beauty.
Yeah, they were nice. I still would say that the late 80s into like the early 90s tag team belts are my favourite, but the current ones are my least favourite of all WWE belts. They remind me of when you have like someone who has bought you a wrestling figure from a pound shop, and they come with a toy belt, and they're the cheapest, genericest title belt ever. And I think that's what the current WWE tag belts look like. Just the cheapest, nastiest tag belt they could design.
Unfortunately, he's hoping that when they do another redesign, they will take the lead of NXT. Because those things are beautiful.
Yeah, they anyway, are.
Your last pick, then?
My last pick, and it couldn't be a Mount Rushmore of title redesigns if I didn't put this one on.
Is it the SmackDown Women's Championship with Charlotte Flair's name on it?
It's absolutely not the SmackDown. I would veto that if that got brought up. No, it's the Big Eagle. It's the for me, it's the title belt that signifies the WWF. It actually, when that came into force in 1996, it was replacing the Winged Eagle, which obviously we all know as the title that Hogan held for a lot of his career. And that actually went out in at WrestleMania 14 when Shawn Michaels was beaten by Steve Austin with the help of a certain Mike Tyson.
Tyson!
When we got to the Raw after that WrestleMania, the title, there was a plinth in the ring and a new title belt, and it was the Big Eagle. It was actually a change of the guard for WWF titles, because they'd for the longest time had used Reggie Parks, who made the titles for the WWF, but. They had a fallout with Reggie Parks had a fallout with WWF because Vince wanted him to sign an exclusivity contract to say he wouldn't like make the redesigns for the public, so they couldn't sell them. He said no because his main source of income was from selling these WWF belts, obviously taking off the logo. So he refused to make WWF belts from then on. So they went with a company called JMAR, which was in Ohio, and they came up with the design for the Big Eagle. It kind of was like an old school style. It had the block WWF logo, had a dark blue strap, which I thought was at the time was absolutely beautiful, and it was just. It signified like another sign of like you said earlier about WWF growing up and this looking like a WWF title. And we mentioned about people getting personalized belts, and this kind of ushered that in as well, because we got a personalized version for Stone Cold. He had the smoking skulls. Then we got one with The Rock, who had the Brahma Bull one. And then we even had one for Mankind, a very, very rare to see one where Mankind had his own personalised belt. But yeah, once that fad of having personalised ones went, we went back to this Big Eagle, and this Big Eagle stayed around for the rest of the decade almost until the where WWF brought in the Undisputed title. So yeah.
Which itself wasn't too bad.
Yeah, it gets a lot of grief because of the Undisputed title, but...
I have grief with it being called the Undisputed title. Once the titles were unified, you just called it WWE Championship.
Yeah, I actually liked the design of it. I thought it was very flashy. It had like stars and like wings on it. I thought that the Undisputed title was beautiful, but...
It was like someone had taken both belts, the WWE and the WWE, and put them in a merging machine, and it was the perfect combination.
I agree.
It's beautiful, it's stylish, and they actually used that as the basis for the Raw Tag Titles.
Yeah, they did.
Possible, anyway.
And at that time, when we had them Undisputed Titles, and then it looked so good on the likes of American Badass Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, I thought that, yeah, it was a really good belt. But my pick is... the WWF Big Eagle title belt for the last one on my Mount Rushmore.
Can you remember the last person who held that title?
The Big Eagle?
No, the Undisputed title.
Oh. I'm going to...
When that belt, whether it's called Undisputed or not, so...
I want to say Eddie Guerrero.
The last person to hold it actively was JBL.
Right, okay. I knew it was around that era.
Although it was wheeled out a year and a half later when Bischoff tried to strip Cena of the championship and it was on Bischoff's shoulder with Angle's name on it. But that's the last time we saw it.
The more you know, the more you know.
I love that theme so much because I like it, mainly because Kurt Angle went off script in it and you actually see Vince basically put him in his place off mic before he carries on. I'm like, oof.
Getting a peek behind the curtain.
It was very nice.
So, Matt, did you have any honourable mentions? Anyone just didn't make the cut?
I was going to mention the spinner belts, but you've mentioned them both already. One, two, three. As the NXT tag titles, they are things of beauty. You've mentioned to me before that you don't like the UK championship, the main one.
Yeah. It's not that I don't like it. I find it busy. I find it very, very busy.
But I like that because when you think about it, us Brits, we overthink things. We overdo things. We always like to be... We have a tradition, maybe it's because of the king and the queen, I'm not sure, but we have this thing about being gaudy, being a royal and regal and everything, pun intended, and it looks a thing of beauty. Yeah, there's a lot going on in it, but it looks like a title belt should look. Would you rather have that or the tag titles in Raw and SmackDown?
That would be, without a doubt, the NXT UK title. And did you know that that's actually had a recent redesign as well?
I had not seen it, no.
It was at the NXT TakeOver Blackpool, I noticed it. They've took the WWE logo out the middle and replaced it with an NXT logo.
That's fine. I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Like I said, I'm not. I don't dislike the belt. I find it. There's too much going on it, and it's just a very busy title.
So yeah, that would be an honorable mention for me. There's other ones which I loved as well. Growing, I mean, I was a big fan of the big gold belt. I mean, everyone's got a soft spot for that. Let's not forget that Booker T is a 5-time WCW champion. Everyone forgets. Do you remember who he beat for his last one?
I have absolutely no idea. Let me have
Kurt Angle.
I was going to actually say Kurt Angle as well.
It was Kurt Angle he beat for it after Austin interfered to cost Angle the championship. So, yeah. I think Austin cost him the championship. It might be Shane McMahon, one of the two. There was a lot going on in Invasion Angle, in fairness.
There certainly was.
Mark Payne didn't count for nothing during that because they changed. Put it this way. Going into Survivor Series, you had the Dudleys and the Hardys as tag title holders. The Hardys were the WWF title holders and the Dudleys were the WCW title holders. But because people had been changing hands left, right, and centre, they couldn't tell whose was whose, the graphics were the wrong way round. So it's no wonder they couldn't keep track of them.
Yeah, it was in that same time when Kane and Undertaker were both championships and they just clipped both belts together and hung them around the necks. So the only other honourable mention I've got from the ones that haven't been mentioned is the Hulk Hogan Winged Eagle one. When I first got into wrestling, that was the title belt. It was actually brought in like late 1998. Just 1988, sorry, just as I was getting into wrestling. And yeah, that was the title belt that stuck around till WrestleMania 14. So yeah, that means a lot to me. But yeah, some great belts really there. And
What I miss more than anything else, it's the European title.
Yeah.
They could get back in NXT UK.
I actually saw a picture on Twitter of an independent wrestler, and he was wrestling for a pretty small promotion, and he was their world champion, and it was literally a replica of the European title. They didn't even use anything to disguise it. It was still had the same logo, still had the country's badges going across the side plates. Yeah, it was.
It's a thing of beauty. I miss it so much.
Yeah, it was a beautiful towel. It was.
I'm interrupting you.
It's all right. I was just going to say how interesting it is that there's been so many title redesigns. It's not until like you come up with a topic like this that you realise that there's a lot to actually talk about when it comes to stuff like this. So, yeah, it's been a very interesting show. Thank you for bailing us out, Matt.
I'm very happy to do so. You say a lot of them have changed, but if you think of some that haven't changed, some big championships, the Light Heavyweight Championship never changed design, the Cruiserweight Championship never changed the original one, of course. Mm-hmm. Even when WCW rebranded, it was WWE logo on it, it's the same design still. And the European Championship didn't change design at all either. So some titles didn't change design, and fairly ones that we yearned for the most, because...
And then you can look at ones like the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. That's not changed its design in decades.
No, and that's to their credit, to be fair.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So, Matt, seeing as there's no poll today, I can't give you some picks for a topic for you to pick from. So, why don't you pick one for yourself? What kind of Mount Rushmore topic would you like to hear?
Oh, I didn't even think about this. Oh, crikey.
Again.
Okay. You have to tell me if I've missed one from ones that have been done, Mags, or not.
I will, you know, yeah, of course.
Okay, so I'd like to hear a Mount Rushmore of cruiserweight wrestlers.
Right, so... Under 205 pounds, I'm assuming.
205, but if you want to go old school cruiserweight, it's 220. So,
well, are we going
from that era? 220, but
so yeah. We're going all time, or
I think all time's got to be counted. One thing I noticed when I was looking back is that I think I might be wrong here, but if I'm wrong, let's cut this out, Mags, please. Thunder Liger actually won the Light Heavyweight Championship in WWE.
I believe he did.
Yeah. I didn't know that until I looked it up.
I mean, adding all time into it, it gives us a lot more to play with, because obviously we had bigger cruiserweight divisions back then. I mean, a lot of wrestlers nowadays could probably go into this division, but for me, it's going to be the standouts who in the world of the giants
condition then must have held a championship in the relevant division.
Right, so cruiserweight champions of all time then.
Or light heavy, or the equivalent of. Yeah, light heavyweight counts as well.
Okay, okay. That's a very interesting topic. I'm sure we'll have a lot of fun researching that. Again, Matt,
I've got sticks in my head already.
Yeah, I could probably ram off about 20, not even going to lie.
Yeah.
And that's with my old man memory.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, if anyone mentions Hornswoggle, veto it immediately.
He was my number one.
Hornswoggle, I love dearly. I saw him against Nick Gage at WrestleMania last year, but as an all-time great champion, nope. He never defended it. So
very, very true.
Hey everyone, it's your girl, the Queen of NE, and I'm so excited to tell you about my show, Queen's Court. It's an awesome, fun, super interactive podcast led by yours truly, bringing you some awesome interviews, some great collabs, and just enjoying discussing our beloved sport of wrestling. You can find me on Twitter at the Queen of NE, on Instagram at XTheQueenOfNE, and of course my podcast, Queen's Court, on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, anywhere podcasts are out. I encourage you to come take a listen to something new, something fresh, and something that you can only have when you hold court with the Queen.
So, Matt, again, thank you for bailing me out. Please let the people who listen to this show know where they can find you and your multitude of podcasts.
Right, you can find me personally at the Matt.UK. You can find all of my shows mainly through that. I do a gaming podcast called Game Junkies with my tag partner, that one, Alex. I do Good Cop, Bad Cop Wrestling podcast with my very good friend, Graham. You can find that at Good Bad Wrestle. Game Junkies, find it at Game Junkies Pod with Z. It's a fantastic listen. And I do a podcast with my little brother called What Are You Talking About, Willis? Find that at Willis Boys Talk. We do that one as often as we can. We've had a few issues offline recently, but we're getting back into it for our year anniversary coming up very, very soon. And, of course, I also produce my other half's podcast, Chris Talks Games. You can find him at Chris Lewis 37. He is way better at podcasting than I am. And I will give him back credit until the cows come home. Anyone out there listening should definitely go check out his show. All of the shows I've just mentioned are available on the Visionaries Wrestling Network. You can find that at VizWrestleNet and on every single podcasting platform. Mags also dabbles on said network as well. And he has... he's been a guest on a show or two with me on there as well. We've actually... I like to call Mags one of my best friends, even though... Is that what you, the script here, Mags? Is that you're my best friend in the world? Right, okay.
The check's in the post, but the check is in the post.
Excellent.
No, honestly, Matt, you are an amazing person. I absolutely love you to death. I'm so glad that you invited me on that prediction show and really set this ball off rolling. And yeah, we've become incredibly good friends. He's one of only two people from Twitter to have my phone number, and the other one being my tag team partner who is missing in action today, Mr. Paul Toller. Yep, he's a superstar. Go and listen to all the podcasts that he is not only a member of the team, but he's also a producer. The guy is an absolute machine. How he does it, I will never, ever, ever know. Yep, you can listen. You can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Follow Paul if you so desire, if he turns up, at Rain Counter. Who had the best Mount Rushmore? Was it Matt here? I think it was. Or was it me? Get involved. Go and give us your Mount Rushmores of the best title belt redesigns. And also, whilst there, give us your Mount Rushmore of the greatest wrestler of all time. But on this show, and this is me doing the outro better than Paul does, even though it's his job. We only have one rule. You can go with your heart or you can go with your gut, but you should always, always use your head.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.